Okay, bear with me just a couple more moments. Well, welcome to the first call of 2011. We're so excited to have you with us tonight. We're going to take on a topic that is absolutely perfect for tonight as we launch into this new year, and we're going to invite everybody here in the family room to come on over and join us. Hi, everyone. It's great to have everyone with us. We have this on record, and we also have it on a basic mute, so if you'd like to participate tonight, just press star 6, and you'll come off of mute to say, Dave, Dave, and as soon as I hear your voice, I'll acknowledge it, and we'll be able to hear your comments or questions. Oh, did everybody have a good Christmas? Everybody's nodding their head. Yes, they had a great Christmas. We sure had a great Christmas here at the Blanchard household. You know, after spending time with coaching clients the last 2 days, I wonder, did anybody buy presents this year? It seemed like everybody chose to have a more meaningful Christmas. Maybe some presents, but presents weren't the focus this year. As it was in our home, we did not make presents the focus in terms of things bought at the store. We ask our children to make a commitment to us that they would honor each other in their relationships, and that somebody's giving somebody directions. Somebody's lost. That they would honor each other in their marriages, that they would be more patient with their children, and that they would worship with us every quarter. That was their gift to us. And I sat right here in this family room where we're sitting tonight, and we all bawled for about an hour and a half while they read these, what we call submissions. They actually prepared a document about this commitment to their family and to our family. That was the best Christmas I could ever remember. We've had Christmases where, you know, Rolex watches and stuff are flying around, you know, and they paled in comparison, this opportunity to just be together and talk about those things that matter most as we go into the year 2011. I do hope that your Christmas was joyful and that you had a great experience as we now go into the new year. We have been spending on these Tuesday night calls, and if you're visiting with us, we spend every Tuesday evening going into one of the qualities of an intentional creator, so that we understand this process clearly. We know that we've got firestorms raging around us in the world, and that those firestorms sometimes can nip at us a little bit. They can cause some challenges for us. And the blessing is that we can now step back, become aware of our thought processes, those thought processes that would sabotage our life, and then consciously choose to change them. And we could say manage them and or create new habits of thinking. Because this we know. We know that our thoughts, how we think, impact how we feel. Hog tells us in Scroll 6, we want to change how we feel, change our thoughts. So how we think impacts how we feel. How we feel impacts how we act. And our actions determine our destiny. If we don't like the destiny in which we're headed, if we don't like the story that we've been writing, well, tonight, January 4th, we get to start writing a new story. We started out a few weeks ago with intentional creation, and the first quality being connecting with people, how to step into someone's world. An interesting conversation this last Sunday with one of my daughters. She was getting ready to buy a new home, and she was putting in an offer. And I thought she should be a little tougher in negotiating. So I was, you know, giving her some fatherly advice, and she was being her typically resistant self. And I pushed a little bit, and she pushed back, and I finally said, I'm just going to let it go. Well, I got up the next morning. I thought, you know, it's interesting. I was dealing with walls of resistance, was I not? Did I step into her world, take down her walls, and find out and create a safe place for this conversation? No, I did not. So I apologized to her. I apologized. I said, I'm so sorry for not stepping into your world. This is your house. I wanted to see even then, even if you paid $10,000 more than you should for it. But I had to bite my tongue, because we learn in quality number one to honor and respect people. Take down their walls of resistance and create a safe place for a conversation. Some things just aren't in their place when we speak like that. Two, we want to start using our mind constructively. Now, this quality number two is going to be tied directly into the quality that we're talking about tonight. We're going to be talking about finding joy in the journey. And one of the major reasons why we don't find joy in the journey is because we haven't disciplined our minds to think constructively. We're thinking destructively. We engage in fantasy, or we engage in catastrophe, or we engage in counterfeit forms of pleasure. And they drag us down into those dungeons of despair and discouragement. It's a terrible place to be. And it's hard to find joy in the journey when you're in one of those places. And there are a lot of reasons in our lives today, with all the firestorms raging, that we could be drugged down into those dungeons. So we will want to be hyper-vigilant, not just vigilant, but hyper-vigilant, as we move into this new year, to become conscious of the thought processes that we're having. I had the craziest experience this year. Sweetheart, could you go grab me a file with an assessment in it? It's on my desk. Thank you. I forgot to bring it out here with me. This week, and if you haven't had an opportunity, go to intentionalcreation.com and watch the videos. Let's have some fun with them. We just put up the external world and the internal world review this afternoon. Tomorrow morning we're putting up what's next. So now you can go, and 6.5 minutes we walk somebody through the basics of intentional creation. Why take the assessment? Why take on these thought processes? Then some instruction. And then we get to the actual results. There are three videos, one to give you an overview of the landscape, and one to help you through the internal world, one through the external world. Thank you. We want this experience to be as rich as possible, but that's not my point. My point is this. I'm very comfortable talking to people. Where we're sitting right now having this conversation, this is just a wonderful place to be. Sitting around with friends or family or standing on a stage in front of 5,000 people, just a wonderful place to be, reaching into people's hearts. But you have me stare into a camera lens and somehow be real and genuine. I was having a heart attack. Now, Ramon and I were going to go up and spend the holiday week at the cabin, and we decided Tuesday I was going to get these films made. Saturday morning, I was still working on them. And yesterday, and today. And I want to tell you what it is. I just want you to hear this. Because I heard stuff that I say to myself that I've never heard before. Because it got so exposed, so raw. There I am staring into that fisheye lens on my iMac, learning how to do a new program called iMovie, and I'm getting pretty good at it now after all these hours. And, you know, you push a button and it just starts going. No. You got to start all over again, you know. Now, what was I going to say? Because the first video was 6 minutes and 56 seconds long. And it was one take, and there wasn't a script. Now, I'll confess, I had a couple of notes pasted around the lens just so I could remember what I was supposed to talk about, because my mind has kept going blank. Because when we're talking like this, I'm coming from my spirit. This is from my soul. When you stare into a lens, you start thinking about what you're saying, and as soon as I start thinking about what I'm saying, you won't believe what my mind is telling me about me. It was really awful. And I did something this week that I don't think I have ever done, and I've been coaching on it ever since, every session yesterday and today. I found that there are times, as Og says in scroll number 6, there are times when despair wants to just drag us down. I'm going to open it up and just read it to you, because it's just a great line. I can get to it really quickly. This is scroll number 6. If you have your scrolls handy, you can open it up with me. He said, "There will be days when I must constantly struggle against forces which would tear me down." Some days are going to be like that. and we're going to face some fires that are nipping at us, that are burning us. I mean, they're singeing the hair on our legs, so to speak, and they hurt. Anybody got one of those? Everybody's nodding their head. We have those. So we got these crazy things going on, and there will be times when you will want to do something more active than try to think yourself out of the way you're thinking. Well, it talks about it in Scroll 6. I've just never understood it as clearly as I did this week. It said something totally different to me. He said, each day when I awake, I will follow this plan of battle before I am captured by the forces of sadness, self-pity, and failure. And then he says, if I feel depressed, I will sing. If I feel sad, I will laugh. If I feel ill, I will double my labor. If I feel fear, I will plunge ahead. If I feel in fear, I will wear new garments. If I feel uncertain, I will raise my voice. Oh, my goodness. I have never read that line. I have produced an hour-long CD on this one scroll, and I've never read that line. Because I started talking to myself out loud. There was something, and there, Rob, you know this, as a therapist, that there are ways to get your mind to kind of disconnect, and there's something about being present in the now and actually taking an action, because that's what Og is saying. Weak is he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. Well, one of the actions is to raise my voice. And I heard me say things about me, to me, in my mind. I can't believe it. But as soon as I heard it, I knew it wasn't the first time it had been said. I just had never been exposed that raw to a fear of talking into a camera. I've directed 200 TV commercials, hundreds of thousands of dollars in budgets. But that's behind the camera. That's a safe place. This isn't in front. Now in front, whatever your in front of the camera is, I'm sharing this with you so you can reflect on your life. What is your in front of the camera right now? What's your big fear? What is it that you're just facing that's scaring the tar out of you? This just got you up at night. For most, it's probably a financial issue. For many, well, talk to yourself when you hear dialogue that's negative. David, you can't put two sentences together. What do you say to that? You look in the lens and you say, David, this is for millions of people who are going to be watching this. They're going to be taking this assessment. And months from now, somebody somewhere in this country who's in trouble is going to be taking this assessment, trying to get answers. And the first thing they're going to watch is you. Could you just look in the lens and touch their heart? I can tell you, the first video, and I'll end with this on the video story, the first video on the homepage of Intentional Creation, it took me a day to get in that space. A day. That's how much negative self-talk I heard. How much are you hearing? Because you won't hear it till you face the demon. I'm kind of excited now to be on the other side of the video production, right? I feel a whole lot better about me. Because I've had some really nice things to say to me about me during that occasion so that I could show up and serve at the level that service was required. But how often do we let that dialogue talk us out of being in creation, in the very place we need to be in our mindset to show up and serve? And if you've got challenges, and we all have them in this economy, it's going to be imperative that your mind be above that negativity so that you can, in fact, be in creation. I have never seen a time in my life when those around me, including me, needed more than today the inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to problems that can come when we are in creation, in mental creation, in constructive thought. I've never seen a time. Oh, isolated, you know, pockets of people and pockets of population, but not quite this pandemic, this inclusive of almost everyone. So let us pull together this week. If you're facing a fear, don't hesitate to find, I wouldn't do this in public, but a private place where you can have an audible conversation with yourself. I am going to talk to these thought processes. I'm going to talk to them. I don't think that's schizophrenia. And I've got a therapist here shaking his head. No, that is not. That's not schizophrenia. That's when you hear voices outside your head, right? So being able to talk to these voices and take charge of them, that's quality too. Now, parenthetically, all of you here and all of you on the phone, when you made the decision to be a part of this program, the decision wasn't just to come to Tuesday night calls. This is where we come to talk about what we're learning by studying the Og Mandino principles. What you purchased was a comprehensive intentional creation studio with hours and hours of material that I could never replicate on a Tuesday night call. We'll touch on highlights, and I'll give you some insights and maybe better ways of understanding or another way of looking at it. But I can never replace on Tuesday night the experience you could have yourself with your own intentional creation studio. Are you familiar with it? Are you spending time in it? Are you studying the scrolls on a daily basis? Are they a part of your life? They are almost magic. They happen to be called intrinsic by nature, which means they have unlimited interpretations and unlimited applications. They will meet you where you are at any given moment, just like this met me. I've never read the line before. I just had a breakthrough. I've been studying the scrolls for 12 years. I just had a breakthrough this week of such magnitude to me in taking on a fear I have never seen before in the scrolls, because I was never in a place where I needed that. I needed it this week, and there it was. Have we got that? You want to be in that place. And then let us come on Tuesday nights to celebrate our discoveries and the insights, and let me share some more with you. Let's take it to the next level. Don't make this your sole source of instruction. You'll miss out on the program. You will not get value for the money you spend. And lastly, we talk about the separation between mental creation and physical creation. And the way we talk about it, we separate ourselves from almost everybody who's teaching. Because the only thing that's manifest in mental creation is ideas, impressions, solutions to problems. Things aren't manifest by vivid visualization. That's like alchemy. I think we gave up on that a few years ago. We get an idea. When we are getting it from the source that we would get it from, if our mind is thinking constructively, it does something magical. It is physiological. It's science. But it feels like magic. It actually excites a part of our brain. And it's interesting to know that we are built in such a way that when we get an inspired idea, one of those aha moments, woohoo, that something happens physiologically in us that excites us. That's what we call igniting your passion. Because when you have that excitement, you're willing to suffer for something that you love. This is the bridge between fantasy and creation. This is the bridge. Because if you can and choose to think constructively, vividly visualize in terms of mental rehearsal, exploration, inspiration, planning, goal setting, problem solving, and you start to get those inspired ideas, that physiological thing happens, we light up, ignites our passion, then the second half makes sense. Without it, it makes no sense at all. Everybody got this distinction? no sense at all. We're going to talk about the physical creation. There is whatever you have to do is burdensome and boring and mundane and repetitious without passion. Passion can only be born out of an inspired idea, impression, and solution to problem that comes from constructive thought. You cannot get an inspired idea from fantasy. The very desire is to escape everything it's going to take to create it and just have it. You can never get an inspired idea when you're in catastrophe, because the power that provides the inspired idea never goes into that dark place. Everybody got the pattern? We let go of destructive thought. We think constructively, intentionally. Inspired idea ignites our passion, and we begin the physical creation, the second half. We've created in our mind. Now we're going to go create it in reality. For some, that should sound kind of familiar. And as we begin that process, that power again shows up. I call that power God. I don't think God's offended if you call it something else. Just acknowledge the power. That power will endow you with more ability when you fully use what you've already got, and will put people on your path who can bless you and who you can bless and serve. You don't get to skip the work of it. And anybody who tells you differently is selling something. They're selling something. I remember seeing this on a video. I asked the universe to give it to me. The universe is stupid. Actually, it's stupid. You kidding me? Not the one I know. It'll give you whatever you ask. Are you kidding me? Oh, how blasphemous. To think that it happens without some effort. Now, when we're in that action, sometimes the blessings come from places where we're not working. That's true. But there's something divinely appointed to the concept of work. And we have been, as a society, trying to find every means possible to avoid it. To have a life of ease. No more pain, no more stress. Have we not? That's where we've been. I just want everybody to understand, as we're going through this process, that that's where we draw a line and cross over a different bridge. Because when we know how to ignite passion, we are willing to do the work. It is no longer burdensome, it's joyful. And in the doing, we create. How exciting. Then we find out that we've got some rebellion. Well, last week I wrote 100 and, well, now as of today, about 186 pages on the new book. So didn't write all of those, but I wrote A New Beginning. I talked about when my proud heart got ripped out by a loving God. It was an interesting night. I like to say without anesthetic. Yeah. Rebellious and resistant. Want to do it my way. And we learn to surrender. This isn't about religion. This is just surrendering to principles. Because we quite often discover the very success we desire is right behind the very thing we're resisting. Isn't that odd? We also discover that when we're feeling resistance, I read this in a wonderful book this week, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, Don Miller, said that when we're feeling that resistance, it's an indication to us. If we're feeling resistance from some other force, that it's an indication to us that we should press forward. It's a very important thing that we're doing. So if we're feeling that negativity, the stronger that gets, the more we should know that we're on the right path. But we let go of our resistance, our resentments, our rebellion. And that brings us to tonight's discussion. And that's on gratitude and finding joy in the journey. Let's see if we can't dig a little deeper than we've ever dug before on this topic. Because right now, is probably one of the most interesting times as it relates to this topic of gratitude. See, gratitude is not the ascetic, you know, in sackcloth and ashes who's going, oh, I'm so grateful for what I have. At least I didn't lose everything. You know, it could be worse. You know, woe is me, but at least I have this. I'm grateful. At least I have a place to lay my head tonight. You know, I've got some food to eat. You know, that's not gratitude. What is gratitude? It's a very simple concept. We've been given a gift. Gift. We have also been charged with the responsibility of creating the most we can with what we've been given. That's simple. It helps us understand a really complex issue. How can I be grateful for what I have, but not feel guilty or ashamed that I want more in my life? Why is that such a conflict? It's been a conflict because we haven't understood the principle. We have a gift, and our mission is to create the most we can with it, to make it magnificent. That way we honor both the gift and the giver of the gift. The giver of gift is only offended when we bury what we've been given. I don't know if you're a Christian or not, don't be offended if you're not. I love the parable of the 10 talents. Harshest reprimand in all of Scripture when somebody buried their gifts because of fear. Metaphorically speaking, kicked them out into outer darkness where there was wailing and gnashing of teeth. You slothful and unwise servant. Well, the metaphor is, if you buried your talents, what price have you already paid? You're already in hell for burying it. You don't need to have deity cast you someplace, and I think that's what was being said. We pay an awful price personally, deeply, when we bury our gifts. We are to magnify them 100-fold. That is our responsibility, to take what we have and create the most we can with it. So we can be grateful for what we have now, and then turn our focus into taking those pieces and magnifying their value. And then we get to be grateful for that. And then do it again. And then do it again. And do it again. Well, now it's getting kind of complicated. Because before, if we were in fantasy, what we wanted was something that quite often isn't honorable. And that is, we wanted to skip all the work, just have the prize, and then live in what it was like beyond that. Just give me the house, dang it. I just want the house. I just want the Ferrari. I just want it. I'm tired. I've been waiting long. I've been sitting in this easy chair fantasizing long enough. Just put it in the garage. You know, we kind of think that way, right? Well, that's not honorable. That's not honoring our gifts or the giver of the gift. That's back to the universe is stupid. So when we are in fantasy, sometimes we are in violation of this very principle. Because we want to skip and avoid. We want to get past the stresses and the pains. So as we go into constructive thought and we begin the process of seeing possibilities and creating realistic expectations and then working toward those, we can actually turn that gift we've been given into something absolutely magnificent. Now, just as devastating as that is what many people have been struggling with recently. And that is being frustrated with the loss of things. I wrote about that on Monday, when Ramon and I had the loss of everything we owned materially. We spent the next 10 years paying back $1 million in debt. Wow. Who knows before this is all over where everybody's going to be? Who knows? But what we did learn, it was just stuff. But we can get resentful about losses. And I'm discovering that sometimes it has a whole lot to do with pride. So humility has his archenemy, pride. I mentioned a few weeks ago that it makes sense for my family to sell one of the Range Rovers that's up here in the garage. A lot of money tied up in it. There's a lot better places for that money, right, sweetheart? Yeah. And then I was told that the concern was that I'm showing weakness. That there might be a concern that I'm not financially stable or whatever. Does it matter? Really? I've said this before, and I'll emphasize it tonight. As we go through this process, I don't know that it's as important whether or not you want what I have, is that whoever is teaching is okay in spite of whatever. I'm okay. Is everybody okay with that? Second of all, if you're going to be around us, we're not going to just make you feel good. Our mission isn't to come here on Tuesday night and sing Kumbaya and everybody just feel so inspired and uplifted and go home driving just feeling so wonderful and warm inside. Yes, we want you to be warm inside. We want you to be inspired, but not artificially. We want the warm inside to be from having courage to go to the place where we can root out the challenges and maximize the strengths that will sustain that inspiration tomorrow when you're by yourself. Because tomorrow matters more than tonight. Now, if that makes you uncomfortable, I will not apologize. I will not. We want so badly for you to find joy in your life, and we know where it comes from. And it doesn't come from fluff. It comes from substance. It comes from courage and taking on our fear and staring into your proverbial camera or your metaphorical camera lens, whatever it is for you, and taking on a fear and overcoming it. That's where the joy comes from. Now, this last week, I was reading Donald Miller's book, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. I highly recommend the book. The book is about writing the story of your life. Do you like the story you've written so far? Are the chapters all fitting together nicely? Because each day is another chapter. Are some of those chapters you'd like to kind of crunch up and put in the trash can sometimes and go back and rewrite? And we have an opportunity to rewrite our lives. He said this, "You didn't think joy could change a person, did you?" This is an interesting line. Joy is what you feel when the conflict is over. But it's conflict that changes the person. You put your characters through hell. You put them through hell. That's the only way we change. Isn't that interesting? But yet the very things we want to avoid and are the very things that will create the change that would allow us to create the things we desire. So you won't find us apologizing for going down this road. We want to bless people's lives truly long term. And that may require some painful evenings together. And some inspiring times. So, let us reframe gratitude. Take whatever you have. Whatever you have. And we don't go, "Well, I wish I had," or "If I only had." Take what you have, because that's what's real. That's what's real. And then create as much as you can with that. And you will be astonished at what you create. I'll tell you one thing, you'll create a whole lot more than if you spend that time wishing you were someone else, somewhere else, doing something different, and resisting, fighting, resenting, and not actually in the action of creation. You give me somebody with very little who's in creation, And I'll show you someone who will fly by someone who's in resentment within days. So let us be in creation. Let us look at gratitude differently. It is a fiduciary responsibility to manage the gifts we've been given. That's what it is. Fiduciary, we're going to be held legally liable. Legally liable? Really? Court of law? No, the court of abundance. We'll be tried. May we be found worthy. Next subject in this area of finding joy in the journey is about the sorrow and the pain. And sometimes we just get a lot of fear. I love this statement from Don's book. He said, the most often repeated commandment in the Bible is, you're going to think this is a Sunday school class by the time we get done, and it's really not. It's just a great place to look for some of these things. He said, the most common, most often repeated commandment in the Bible is do not fear. 200 times. You find that. 200 times, do not fear. That seems a couple of, that means a couple of things. If you think about it, it means we're going to be afraid. Anybody get to miss that one? Not if you're taken on live. You will be afraid. And it means we shouldn't let fear boss us around. That makes sense. Before I realized we were supposed to fight fear, I thought of fear as a subtle suggestion in our subconscious designed to keep us safe. And more important, keep us from getting humiliated. And I guess it serves that purpose. But fear isn't only a guide to keep us safe. It is also a manipulative emotion that can trick us into living a boring life. Isn't that true? I'm watching Sherry nod her head. She's one of my fear heroes. Her and John Wolf. Yep. The fear heroes. I think that's probably enough for this book tonight. I borrow in the material from Khalil Gibran's book, The Prophet, where he talks about sorrow. I won't read all of this tonight. But it's interesting that sorrow and joy are bedfellows. They're opposites end of the same stick. You either get one or you get the other. And he says, Then a woman said, speak to us of joy and sorrow. And he answered, your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the self's the same well from which your laughter rises oftentimes is filled with your tears. And how else going to be? And one of my favorite quotes in all of literature, the deeper the sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Now, I think it's a favorite because if you've ever had your heart hollowed out by sorrow, and you've gone to that place that is so private and so deep and so sacred, that place that is reserved for life-changing and life-crushing experiences. If you've been there, you know what I'm speaking of, where you just tremble from a place inside your soul that you didn't even know existed. If you've been there, you know what that means, to have your soul hollowed out by pain. It is not the cup that holds your wine, the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven. It is not the lute that soothes your spirit. That's beautiful music. The very wood that was hollowed with knives. One last sentence. When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. Sitting right there in the corner of that couch on Christmas morning, our son shared something so deep, so rich, that we just all wept spontaneously. Having witnessed him go through this process and us with him in the pain, and to know that that which gave you sorrow is now giving you joy. That's life. We have a tendency to want to skip all those pieces. okay. We were sitting here at dinner Saturday night, and there was Sherry and Kevin Hall and Shondell and Chad Hymas and Ramona and me, and we're talking about our children. We talked about Christmas, and we made this clarification. Right now, in this moment, there is such joy, but there have been moments of such pain, and there will be again. We don't get to go on a journey that takes us out of it and then keeps us from it. It doesn't work that way. Life will have its twists and turns, and sorrow is just part of the process. So if you are experiencing it now, hearts go out to you. I want to wrap our arms around you and hug you and support you. And when you come out of it, do that for the next one who's having sorrow and that pain. And that way we get to serve one another through this process. But let us not attempt to avoid it nor resent it when it comes. I can tell you retrospectively the greatest lessons I've ever learned in life I learned in the darkest hours. That's when the truth was revealed. Maybe it took that to humble me enough to be taught the truth. Possible. Don't necessarily want to go back to that place again, but probably will, because there's more lessons to be learned. We don't just learn them. This is a journey of learning. Let us be willing. It's part of the process. Next. Recognition and remuneration. This is an interesting challenge as we move into 2011. I hear this all of the time. I want to fire my boss. Entrepreneurial spirits everywhere. They want to get away from the order and the structure, and they hate the politics and all the negativity that's going on in their jobs. I think work is just a great gift. We're going to ask you tonight that tomorrow morning, wherever you work, whatever you do, that you fall back in love with it. David, are you crazy? They don't pay me enough. They don't respect me enough. They don't give me guidance enough. You know, I don't know, you've heard the list, right? We've all been there. We're going to invite you to fall back in love with it. And I want to share with you the best I can the reason why. When we show up loving what we're doing, we're not doing it for the paycheck anymore. That was pre-negotiated. We're now doing it to embrace our own natural genius, to bring all that we have to that situation. Because when we experience our own natural genius, we have a better understanding of who we really are. You see, when we hate our job, we are doing something that destroys our own esteem. We think the job's destroying it. No, we're destroying it by how we're showing up in the job. Now, that doesn't mean that showing up loving is going to change your boss. That may not be the case. Or your employees if you are the boss. But imagine showing up with this intention. I am going to lift and build somebody's life today. I'm going to find some good. Find out what's important to them. I'm going to step into their world. I'm going to leave people in my workplace feeling valued. You see, when we hate our jobs, we want them to value us. We shouldn't need anybody to value us. We should be valuing ourselves by fully maximizing all that we have and can bring to the workplace. Whatever that work is, and be focused on other people. not only do we fall back in love with what we're doing, we find meaning and purpose in what we're doing. Because most of the times we're looking at greener grass on the other side of the fence, as if there aren't any snails over there or any snakes in the weeds. There are just as many over there as there are here. It just looks better from a distance. So we get to fall in love with where we are. Lift where you stand, if you will. Make it count. Now, when we focus this way in our work, we're not doing it to be seen. We're not doing it so someone will recognize us. You ever seen somebody work like that? I mean, it's kind of like, did you see, huh? Did you notice, huh? That's the way I used to wear my Rolex watch, you know. Did you see it this time? Let me try that again, you know. When we work that way, we are so preoccupied with being noticed and appreciated, we are not bringing our genius to the task itself. What a tragedy. And in not doing that, we don't have the self-satisfaction from a job well done. We've missed this point in America. It's not categorical, but it's pretty widespread. We've just missed it. We work just hard enough not to get fired, get paid enough just to not quit. I mean, it's just kind of where we are. So let us, as OGG advocates, be different. Let us be examples in the workplace. Stepping into people's worlds, honoring people, doing our very best in everything that we do. Let us be the stellar example. Now, who do you think is going to get the opportunities for advancement in pay? The one who's trying to be noticed so they can get the raise? Or the one who's bringing their genius to the work product? What do you think, long term? The latter, of course, rhetorical question. So let us fall back in love with what we're doing. If you have another business, such as a home-based business, if you have a network marketing business or direct selling business, you're an OGG affiliate, whatever it might be, then pour your heart into that, knowing that what you are doing right now is paying the bills and providing a bridge to the next adventure. Don't cut the bridge short and try to swim through shark-infested waters. And don't try to quit something before you are, last point on this, until you are fully prepared to become your own boss. Too many quit before they're willing to apply for the job. They fire their boss before they hire themselves. The best way to hire yourself is to fall back in love with your work, the boring, the mundane, the repetitious pieces. Find passion for those things. You can go back into quality 2 and 3 and assist you in that process. How are we doing? My goodness, time flies when we're meeting like this. Managing our time. In the book, Stephen M. R. Covey's book, The Speed of Trust, he talks about the pillars of trust. And I've talked about this before. What is our intention? Are we integrous? Do we walk our talk? Do we have capability? And what are our results? Managing our time is not about being busy. And it's amazing how many people in our society are looking for ways to fill their day. Got an hour left to work. What can I do to fill this time and look busy and valuable and get my last hour of pay for the day? I mean, what would happen is if we, as advocates of OGG's work, change from busy to results? I can tell you right now, there is not an award, there's not a trophy that I can think of for busyness. Nobody's going to give you a badge of honor. I was the busiest person in the world. I'm so busy, I'm just so overwhelmed. So what? Question is, what did you accomplish? What were the results? results are king. It is all that matters. And as Stephen R. Covey said, we don't say, well, I did everything you told me to do. Then do something else. Because our focus isn't the doing. Our focus is the creating. It's creating results. So we're thinking about managing our time. Go back to the power sessions in quality number 3 and start choosing those things that are most important and focus your time and energy on those pieces. If you've got a clear vision of where you want to go, then you know why you're doing what you're doing today. There is a purpose for it. It's not about filling the day. It's about creating the next millimeter in the process. That's intentional creation. And that's how we manage our time. We fill in as much as we can. Interesting day, huh, sweetheart? This has been a glorious day. Before the day ever got started, I got to spend 3 hours writing on the book. It was fabulous. Just glorious. And I thought about it after. I don't do this often. I did it for 2 years. I got up at 4 and wrote till 8. I got up at 3 this morning and wrote till 6:30. I'm not saying that to whine. The reason why I'm sharing it with you is when I got to 6:30 and I realized what had just happened, the first thought that crossed my mind was, what would I have missed if I had not gotten up when I woke up and wrote that? There were some inspired moments this morning that I don't know that would ever be replicated. They'd have been missed. What are we missing when we're either holding back, wasting time, or just being busy? What are we missing? Those precious moments where we get inspired ideas and we take actions and life shifts. Had a great coaching session with someone this week. He wants to become an animator. And he's going to school for it. And he's got some natural talents. Funny guy. We were trying to come up with an idea for his animated short. And we talked about calling it Stop Picking on Me. Anybody want to guess what it's about? It came out of an occasion the other day when Ramon and I were driving home from church on Sunday. And my nose was so dry, and there was one of those crusty ones, you know? Anybody had one of those before? You know? And you just can't stand it anymore. So I did my best to extricate it, best I could, and Ramona's there. I said, sweetheart, we've married 36 years. I've never seen her pick at her nose. And I said, sweetheart, do you ever get one of those? And she says, oh, yeah. Well, what do you do? Well, I pick it out. And I said, when? Oh, I do it in private. And I thought, oh, I need to be a little bit more cautious where I'm doing it. And we came up with some really fun, crazy ideas for how this thing is building in someone's nose and they're in public and they can't do anything. And, you know, how do you deal with that? Anybody have, doesn't everybody deal with this at some point? Doesn't everybody have kind of a dry nose every once in a while? What do you do? Nobody talks about it. And heaven forbid you do it in public, right? You got to kind of... So there's all these private nose pickers in the world. And so we're having some fun talking about that. And the reason why we're having this conversation with him was if you're going to be an animator, be the best animator in the world. And if you're not, what would you do to become that? If you're going to be an AUG affiliate, be the best affiliate in the world. If you're going to be a coach, be the best coach in the world. Whatever it is, be the best at that. Do some research. Spend some time. Invest some energy in it and become the best. That's how we manage our time. Because we're not managing a clock. We're managing the pages of our life. And what are you putting on your pages? May we start tonight with I am going to write a different story. When I leave here tonight, I'm not going to talk myself out of something. I'm not going to sleep in tomorrow. I'm not going to whine and belly. I'm going to write a different story. Today, I begin a new life. What do you think? We all want joy in the journey, do we not? Joy comes from, and here's the list, living gratitude, which means taking fiduciary responsibility for the gifts you've been giving and magnifying them. Accepting joy and sorrow and being gracious when sorrow comes. Ramona and I spent some time with a dear friend of ours who's 47-year-old, is that correct? Wife passed away the week before Christmas. Well, that's kind of tough. We spent an hour talking to him. It's pretty precious as he shared with us his experience. Tough on his 12-year-old son and his two daughters and his older son, especially on the 12-year-old. To hear a person with such grace and his wife who had such grace in the last few weeks of her life. When I spent time with Chad on Saturday. For those of you who missed the call, Chad just got back from his 300th speech when we met on Christmas Eve. 300th speech in 2010. It's got to be a record. That's more than a speech. That's, well, it's almost a speech every day, isn't it? You know how many miles he traveled? 500,000 miles. 350,000 of them on Delta. It's really fun to be with him at the airport. You think he was the CEO of Delta Airlines. Now, he says it's partially my condition because you understand Chad is quadriplegic. He has no feeling from his armpits down. None in his arms, even. He can move his arms a little bit, enough to move his wheelchair, but he can't feel them. 300 speeches, 500,000 miles, and he travels by himself. We were in Iowa together a few weeks ago, a couple months ago, I guess now. When I dropped him off to go to the elevator to get his car, because he gets to park his car where the pilots park theirs, so I mean, lucky guy, you know? I was exhausted. I wasn't exhausted from what I did. I was exhausted from watching him do what he does. His life will never be the same. He sat here, and I've heard him say this before, so I know I could share it, but it was in one of those moments where he just turned to me and said, Dave, I miss my body. I do. I miss my body. But you know, I wouldn't have the credibility to speak to the people I do who need to hear what I have to say without this. So I've traded my body for the privilege of being with people and lifting their lives. Wow! What problems do you have that won't be over in a week or a month or a year? I can't think of too many problems we can't get over in a little while. He will, for the rest of his days, have a regimen every 2 hours, every 48 hours. It's unbelievable what he goes through. It takes him an hour and a half to get dressed every morning. Painstaking. Little hook to pull the button through the buttonholes. I mean, it's driving. And he'll return an email instantly. He's the most gracious person we did a little something for him at the office this week, and everybody got thank yous from him. I don't take time to do that. And Chad, my goodness, he has to pull these instruments out and type it on his... He has to go through effort to type. And I don't, even with effortless typing, do what he does. What a lesson. Could he be wallowing in this? I fear I would be. Are you emotionally paralyzed? What sorrow are you dealing with? Take heart and follow the example of some of these great giants. He didn't sign up to be a speaker. He didn't sign up to be a best-selling author. All he wanted to do was raise elk till that 2,000-pound bale of hay rolled over and crushed him while he was rushing to feed the elk so he could get home and see his son take his first step. Let us take whatever it is, and let's use it in the service of others. Whatever it is. It is what it is it not? Resisting it doesn't change it. Because the pain is not in the change. The pain's in the resistance to the change. Fall back in love with your work. Manage your time by focusing on results. And discover meaning and purpose in all you do by focusing on serving people. Lifting and building everywhere you go. It matters less what you do and more how you do it. We keep looking for the Holy Grail, don't we? I fear you'll be disappointed when you get there. If you don't love what you're doing right now. Well, thanks, everybody. Have a great week. And we'll be back with you next Tuesday night. Now, next Tuesday night. Wow. Guess what we're talking about next Tuesday night? We kind of led into it tonight. Quality number 6, self-esteem. We're going to take on what creates challenges in self-esteem and how to heal it. Because when we are a society where we identify with our things, and our things get threatened, our self-esteem is in danger. It's imperative that we get it anchored properly so that we can withstand any loss. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next Tuesday night. Now, remember the IC, Intentional Creation Studio? Go to Quality 6 and listen to self-esteem so that our conversation next week can be deeper and even more meaningful. And in preparation for it, I want you to start reading 3 times a day, scroll number 4. I am nature's greatest miracle. Thanks, everybody.